Hi, everybody. It's Lisa Coffey. I'm Parama at the Vedanta Society, and this is Ancient Wisdom for Modern Seekers, our monthly class. And today, our very special guest is Swami Harinamananda. He is the head minister of the Vedanta Society in San Diego. So he has a beautiful temple ashram there that he takes care of all by himself. He's right near the San Diego Zoo. So if you're ever in San Diego, drop by and see him. He's got some amazing classes and stuff all online. And he's the founder of the Vedanta Life Academy. So we'll make sure to ask him about that so you can sign up for classes at the Vedanta Life Academy if you're interested in that. Welcome, Swami.
Oh, well, welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, we're excited. And you've become kind of the resident Chandi expert at the Vedanta Society because you've given a lot of workshops and lectures and even a retreat all about the Chandi. It's an amazing text.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's something that I fell in love with. And it was one of these books that somehow just... it fell onto me. It's not that I went looking for it, but it somehow it came to me, and it started in one sense. Just some attraction occurred, and I somehow got taken with it, and mm-hmm. It's become something that has become has been helping me unfold. And I'm excited about it. And so maybe I'd like to maybe have a little discussion about some of the main concepts in this book. Is this a small group? So is it possible if you're not uncomfortable to maybe see you in the video screen? I mean,
That's a good idea. Everybody turn your video on so that Swami can see you.
If you can.
And then that way, if you have a question, you can just raise your hand or whatever, and then he'll know what's going on.
A formal kind of lecture. So it's meant to be more of a discussion. Exactly. That was at least my understanding of this. This is a Sunday talk. It's a informal, casual discussion about some concepts of spiritual life, as I understand. Yes. So I'd like to get your input because I think I'm the type that I'm a seeker, and I feel that the great thing about these type of discussions is we all can learn from each other, because I do feel that each one of us is seeing the same divine reality from a different viewpoint. And I think all of us collectively to get together can give a better understanding, a more holistic understanding of what we're experiencing. If we call it divine, this like divine mother. So just so I have an understanding, is that are most of the people familiar, maybe you can tell me, Parma, with Vedanta concepts? Are they mostly from are there people that don't go to our Vedanta temple?
There are a lot of people from the Center for Spiritual Living, but I was giving a kind of beginning Vedanta class for almost 2 years before the lockdown. So they have the basics down.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's start off with the prayer. This is a traditional prayer to the Divine Mother. Om Sarva Mangala Mangaye Shive Sarvartha Sadike Shranye Trambake Gauri Narayani Namustute Narayani Namustute Narayani Namustute. O Mother, you are all auspicious and the fulfiller of all desires. Our salutations to you. So when we talk about this, so what I'm going to talk about today a little bit is as Parma was talking about, is this Chandi. And it is a textbook, which I don't have with me.
I have one right here.
Oh, you have one. Yes.
So you guys are familiar with what the cover looks like?
Right. Yeah. And there's various.
Yeah. Oh, see, Anu has a copy too. There's various different forms of it. But
there's interpretations written by different authors. I use one that's written by, I like the one by Devadatta Kali. Mm. He's given a very, an English translation of that. And then there's other ones which have a more yogic type of interpretation. There's others that have a more devotional interpretation. And basically, so how many are, so are most of you familiar with this book?
Well, I think
raise a hand if you're familiar with it.
At Hollywood, and I think Anu was there. Mandita was there.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I mean, there's so much material in this book that I mean, you could do a whole retreat on it, like you did in San Diego. But you know, we only have an hour, so you got to give us the little heart of it.
I'm just going to give you the gist of it, and that's good enough. I mean, I actually had given a we did a course on the Chandi in our Vedanta Life Academy. It was a 6-session course. But in our Ramakrishna order, you'll find a lot of a lot of devotees chant this Chandi. There's a Swami, Tathagatananda in New York, who used to chant it every day. In fact, you'll find that our Swami here, Swami Sarvadevananji, has people chant this Chandi when they're in times of crisis as a way to get power, as a way to get strength. It's a way to create a relationship with the divine. And when you chant it, or when you read it, it can be chanted, you can read it in English, you feel something. You feel something, maybe strength, power, conviction. And I used to have when I was in training center, there was a brahmachari that was a young novice monk that was my roommate. And he used to chant this Chandi. And he would tell me that he'd be bullied in school. You know, as a young person in going in India, he'd be bullied in school. I think they call it teasing, or in college, I forget what it's called, ragging. And so he used to chant this Chandi. And after some time, he told me that he felt like when he was walking to school, there was a 10-foot divine image behind him, like a 10-foot body, like a bodyguard. And that was the Divine Mother. And he just felt, with that source of strength and power, she was there behind him, protecting him. So whatever, he stopped being teased. That confidence he had, he just felt that there's something behind me. So what we start to see is that there's something when you chant or say this, it starts to cultivate a relationship with the divine. And normally, when we talk about this chant, this text basically, I think, does three things. And I actually have a little bit of here. Maybe I can give this to you. I put this. Let me. Can I share a screen?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
You should be able to. If you can't, then I think I need to make you a co-host or something.
Can you make me a co-host?
Yeah, let me see how I do that. There.
Okay. All right. So then I should be able to share my screen here. Okay, there we go. Share screen. Okay, so let me just do this here. If you'll see that the Divine Mother, the text will kind of gives you, first of all, a feeling of who is the Divine Mother. And what you'll see is that I think the text answers three questions. It explains who's the Divine Mother. It also, it's a template for a spiritual map. And it actually gives you kind of like a template for the soul's return journey home. And I'll explain that. And all of this is engulfed in a beautiful mythology. And this in a scripture. And this scripture, the Chandi, has 700 verses. Do you know what other famous scripture has 700 verses? Anybody?
The Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Bhagavad Gita. So it's the equivalent to the Bhagavad, it's the Shakta equivalent to the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, this text is part of a much larger scripture called the Markandeya Purana. Just like the Gita is part of a much bigger scripture called the Mahabharata. And in this, so you do get this feeling where it's saying, well, who is this divine mother? It gives you a fine. Who is the divine? And who is she? So that's the first question that maybe we just, let's just tackle in an instant here. Can I get a feeling from you guys if I ask you, who is the divine mother to you? What would you say to me? Again, this is a group sharing process. Yes, Parma?
To me, it's Sharada Devi. I really connect with her. I connect with her and she's helped me so much. So she's with me all the time, close to my heart.
So that's wonderful. So you're connecting Sharada Devi to the universal cosmic mother. And what do you think, as the universal cosmic mother, what's the function of that divine mother? Let's just go very simply. What is her function? What does she do?
She creates, sustains, and destroys.
Also she provides love and encouragement,
support.
Anyway,
wait, so I can see you guys. She gives love, support. Anything else? Okay, so wonderful. So you're right. From her to call, what else? So I missed out. Someone said something.
Honest. Okay.
Protection.
Protection.
Courage.
Okay.
Courage.
So you can see that. Yeah. So all of that comes from this one mother. So this cosmic mother, who Parma says she creates all of us. We are made of that same essence of what she is. She creates us. She sustains us. How does she sustain us? You guys are saying with love. With food, with knowledge, she sustains us. And then eventually she even dissolves, she brings us back to her, all right? And so you guys are all right. She's also, when you think of the divine, what do you think is the difference between what we say Brahman and divine mother? Because if you listen to Sarva Priyananda, we'll talk about the divine as the infinite consciousness, Brahman. So what's the difference between the two?
She's actually working through the actions and expressions and experiences.
So very good.
The power and the energy.
The power and the energy. So when you think of Brahman, that is something you think of that when you remove all your sense of limitations, you are identified with that infinite consciousness. So when you think of Brahman, it is what you are in essence. It is an identity. It is a consciousness that you are identified with when you remove all your sense of limitations. That same consciousness that we call Brahman, when we think of it as one we want a relationship with, as one that we worship, as a consciousness that responds to us, that is receptive to us, we call that same consciousness the Divine Mother. So that Divine Mother is a consciousness that we can worship, it is that we can pray to, and that responds to us. So it's a responsive consciousness compared to Brahman, which is a consciousness, which is that it just is. It is our true existence, but it's not a responsive consciousness. When you want a response, when you're in times of trouble, when you need help, when Swami Vivekananda would say sometimes, when I'm hungry, when I'm sick, I'm crying to the Divine Mother, help, help, help. When I'm feeling meditative and I'm more Sufic, then I'm feeling I'm one with it. So that same consciousness can be seen in different ways, experienced in different ways. So that Divine Mother is a consciousness that guides us, that supports us, that sustains us, that loves us. And that Divine Mother, let me go back to the sharing screen, has two aspects to her. She has what's called a loving aspect, which is known as Ambika. Get my share screen, here we go. Okay, which is called Ambika. And when you think of that Ambika side of the mother, sometimes we think of it, it takes the name of Tripura Sundari, Sri Vidya. She's a supportive, loving, caring, nurturing, compassionate mother that is there to support us. That same mother can also has another side called Chandika. And Chandika is from the Chandi, means ferocious. Now, the question I may have for you guys, why do you think a mother would need to be ferocious? Why would she need to be fierce?
To protect her children.
Yes, to protect her children. So just like a lion is nurturing and loving to its cub, it is vicious to its enemies. So it is ferocious to its enemies. So when you get in the realm, the orbit of the Divine Mother, what happens is that she now wants you all to herself. When you get into that spiritual orbit, all of a sudden you start to get pulled by her love. And what happens when an object, say, gets into the pull of the gravitational field of, say, Earth, into the atmosphere of Earth, when a meteorite comes into contact and starts to come into the atmosphere, what happens? It starts to?
Goes to it.
It
brings it to it.
It starts to disintegrate. It starts to get heated. When you have that meteorite coming into our atmosphere, it starts to burn up. When you start to come to the atmosphere of the Divine Mother, that Chandika side, she starts to eliminate all those distractions that come in the way between you and her. So she starts to eliminate the people, the things that distract you away from the divine. There's a doctor. I remember Swami Swahananda's doctor, our Swami before Swami Sarvadevananda, was said that, oh, you know, Swami, when I joined spiritual life, I thought everything would be love and bliss and I'd be experiencing joy all the time. He says, what I'm finding myself more difficulties and more struggles. I'm finding more things, more obstructions coming. Why is that? Swami said the same thing. When you come to the gravitational pull of the mother, that heat is tapas. There's a Sanskrit word. Tapas means austerity, means heat. She starts to burn away those impurities that are preventing you from experiencing your divine nature. That's what happens, and that is her Chandika side. Eliminate all the things so you can experience your divinity. So in this Chandi, then you'll discover that the Divine Mother has these two Shaktis, these two powers, and they're called Avidishakti, which is the power to create this world, the power for us to see all the various enjoyments that we experience and to play in the world. And there's also another power, it's called Vidyashakti. After we're done playing with the things we need to do, after we've had enough, she's now gives you that Shakti, that knowledge, which starts to bring you back to your divine center. And in fact, this, what you're looking at here, is called can you see this? It's a Sri Vidya Yantra. It's a yantra is like a map, a spiritual map. And this is what this Chandi really is. It's a spiritual map. And the Sri Vidya is, you can see, in the center is the divine. And the one becomes the many. So it unfolds itself like a flower, unfolding in all these petals. And it unfolds itself till you get to this, the blue part. The blue part is called the Bupura. It's the earthly existence. It's where our consciousness is at right now. And so our consciousness is in the earth, and we're here because we value the earth. We value, Ramakrishna would say, in one sense, we value lust and greed. So what we value, that becomes our reality. When you value lust, you see things in terms of beauty. When you look at a picture, you'll see the beautiful people that come into your mind. If you value money, greed, you measure life in terms of money. You see people with the Rolex watches. You value time in a sense to what you can get out of it, what you can as an exchange. So what you see is based on what your value. So your values become your reality. And as you start to go, as you've had enough of the toys, enough of the experience, then you start saying, tatakim, what next? And you start to want to go back to your divine center. You want to go to something permanent. And what you'll see is that the flower petals, the red, represents sort of a mental. So you have the physical level by the blue, then there's the mental level, which is the red, and then when you get to the orange with all these triangles, these are just various powers, various deities. This is more in the unconscious mind, your causal level, until you get to the center of your own being, the center of your awareness, the Divine Mother herself. And when we're trying to get to the center, we have to face three basic obstructions. So in the Chandi, it has three different stories. And each story is about an obstruction that we have to face till we get to our divine center. The first obstruction is Tamas. And Tamas, basically, these gunas are energies, and these energies are not only what create the world, but they also, they're energies within our mind. And they create the feeling of stagnation, the feeling of desires, and the feeling of insight. And these energies are constantly circulating and changing within our mind. And so when we're feeling tamasic, we feel our mind covered more in ignorance. You'll feel that we feel confused. We feel inactive. We feel dark. It's when we feel depressed. When that things start to lighten up, and like so the clouds start to sort of open up a little bit, we have more, then our same mind starts to feel more rajasic. And when it's feeling rajasic, it causes the ego to project out, and we're filled with desires. We start to feel agitated, restless, dissatisfied. We constantly have to be doing things. And then when that starts to sort of burn away, the mind becomes more clear, transparent. That's the feeling of sattva. Sattva means more balanced. And in balance, we feel more content. We feel more joyful. It's actually the mind is reflecting more our divinity itself. And we feel more introspective. But yet, that also is an obstruction. So what you start to find is that we see the world through these three lenses. When we're in Thomas, we can see the same thing. I was giving the joke when one of our, in a monk's conference, if we had a great speaker, let's say Swami Sarvapriyananda, who most of you know, if you were to speak and people were to watch him speak, the monks that were feeling tamasic mind would feel like, oh my God, I'd never be able to speak like him. He's so great. I'll never be like that. Why even bother speaking? I'm just going to give up. If you're rajasic minded, you'd see him talking and you'd say, why does he have so many YouTube hits? I can get that many hits. What makes him so special? I should be just as great. And if your mind has more sattvic, you start to listen to his talk and you get more insights. You start to get more clarity and you feel, wow, this is such a great talk. I love it. So these are basically, in essence, the threefold sort of like obstructions till we get to our true divine nature. And that is what the Chandi talks about in these mythological stories. And in short, our time is running short. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to take you on a journey of this Chandi very quickly. And I'm going to use the help of Joseph Campbell called, for many of you, you probably know Joseph Campbell. He's basically had collected all these mythologies, looked at all the mythologies in the world and condensed them into the hero's journey. And this hero's journey has four parts. There is the part of separation, where you get separated, the hero gets separated from his home, or you become separated from your divine center, and then you descend. And you descend into the unknown aspect of this unknown world, the unknown mind, and you come across all the obstructions that you have to face before you return home. And then when you return home, you come back in a more transformed way, with new knowledge. And so this, in essence, is what this Chandi is about. And really briefly, let me just kind of like, if I can do this here, I'll play this for you. Okay, so we start off with, and basically there are, the Chandi starts off with three characters. There's these two characters, a king, his name is Siratha, and a merchant, his name is Samadhi. And they both basically have been separated from their kingdom, Siratha the king, and merchant Samadhi has been betrayed by his family. So they end up leaving their kingdom and family, and they end up in a forest, contemplating what happened in their life. And so in this forest, in this feeling of suffering, they come across a sage, and the sage's name is Mathas. And Mathas actually means, let me see if I have this here. Mathas means, he's a mentor. It really means an awakened mind. So because of some crisis, something's happened, we've retreated. And we've retreated now. And in this bewildered state of mind, something happens within us. An awakening occurs. Here it could be awakening, meeting a guru. A guru literally means showing, removing darkness and giving us light, or a mentor, or an awakening within our own mind. And this Mathas tells them, they tell them about their problems, the suffering that they're going through. And Mathas basically tells them that your suffering ultimately is due not to your wife or to your loss of your kingdom, but it's really due to the Mahamaya, to this divine mother. And then they wonder, well, who's this divine mother and why is she creating this suffering? And then Mathas says, basically, I'm going to show you who the divine mother is. And when you get down to it, symbolically, Siratha really means our body. It's a good chariot. Samadhi means our mind. Mathas is taking our awareness from our body, which it's normally in, and our mind, and now going to shift the awareness to who? To the Divine Mother. And then getting it to the Divine Mother, it has to take us through these obstructions, through the difficulties that we're facing. And that's what Mathas is going to do. And before I get into what Mathas does, there's a poem by Hafiz. And I'm going to read this poem to you because I love this poem. And I think it's the beginning of the journey that he takes us. Hafiz says, it's called My Eyes So Soft. He says, don't surrender your loneliness so quickly. Let it cut more deep. Don't surrender your loneliness so quickly. Let it cut more deep. Let it ferment and season you as few human or even divine ingredients can. Let it ferment and season you as few human or divine ingredients can. Something missing in my heart tonight has made my eyes so soft, my voice so tender, and my need for God absolutely clear. What Hafiz is saying and what Mathas is going to do is telling him, let's not superficially cover up your pain and suffering. Because we could cover it up. The merchant who's betrayed by his family and wife, he could have told them, well, just go to the bachelor show and get another wife or get another kingdom. But he doesn't do that. He doesn't want to put a superficial band-aid on the pain that they're experiencing right now. He wants to take them to the source of the pain so that they can find an ultimate solution. And what does he do? So he takes them to the first obstacle that they're facing. And in the Chandi, it talks about a mythology now. And the mythologies are great because they are stories that are about us and about the psychological difficulties we're facing and how to get out of them. And they're timeless. So in this first story, you can see it's talking about the difficulty that we face with Thomas. And he gives a story about these two demons, Madhu and Kaitaba. And he talks about these two demons that want darkness to remain. We're experiencing what's called pralaya. It's in between the universe is being made, and before it's made, there's a period of inactivity. And in that period of inactivity, it's darkness. So out of darkness, Brahma is coming out. And I think I actually have this here. I'll just share this story for you right here. In fact, we'll just use this. You'll see here. There's a mythology. Vishnu is the god here. Brahma is coming out of the navel of Vishnu. And Brahma wants to project out the universe. It's time for creation to occur. What happens is two demons, Madhu and Kaitava, come out of Vishnu's ear. Madhu and Kaitava represents the inertic force to keep us in darkness. Madhu literally means honey. It means the sweetness of being in ignorance. And Kaitava, another demon, means bee. It's an insect from Ketu, means bee. It's the honeybee. The honeybee, the bee that the critical voice, it's always buzzing in us. It's telling us we're not good, we're not worthy. Don't even try. Remain in darkness. So what these two demons want to do is they want to kill Brahma, who wants to project out light, who wants to project out the universe. But they don't want the universe. The demons don't want the universe. So they want to kill Brahma. And what does Brahma do? Being helpless, what does he do? All he can do is pray to the Divine Mother. And he gives this famous prayer, the Brahma Stiti, Tvam Swaha, Tvam Swada, Tvam Yuvashakara Swatika. So this is chant. And in essence, he's praying to the Divine Mother to awaken Vishnu. Vishnu represents consciousness. It represents our consciousness to awaken us up to the difficulties we're in. We are in this feeling of Thomas, darkness. And we stay in Thomas by the addictions, the things we don't want to face, the difficulties we're having. And so how do we suppress the light? By eating the cookies, by the junk food, by ignoring what has to be done, by not dealing with things. So we take all the things that we shouldn't, the alcohol, the addictions, the things we shouldn't do, to keep us numb. Brahma emerges out of us. It's the desire to change, the deep desire to awaken. But how does it awaken? Oh, when you're feeling Thomas, all you can do is prayer. So that is the sadhana when you're experiencing Thomas. Pray to who? The Divine Mother. For what? To awaken Vishnu, to awaken your consciousness, to help you see that you have responsibilities. What you're doing is causing suffering to others, to take responsibility, to move out of that inertic energy, to be energized, to take charge of yourself, to get responsibility. Help me, Mother, help me do this. So what does she do? She basically awakens Vishnu, gives you that power, and Vishnu gives you the power to cut these demons. So through this prayer, through the idea, mother, through that agitation that you're feeling now. Thomas begins with inertia and it ends in agitation. Let me do something. Let me be somebody. Let me get out of this state I'm in. And mother gives you the power and strength to let go of the demons that are holding you back. And now you have that, and now you take charge. Okay. Once you take charge and awaken, then you face the next demon. And that is the demon of Mahishasura. And this is a demon that now, as we go deeper into our own consciousness, we start to see that when we become somebody, when we can do things, then we want to hold on to the things that we do. Not only that, we want more, we want better, we want different, we want power, and we want control. So Mahishasura really is about the power and control that we are in. And in this story, it talks about this Mahishasura god who's this demon, the force of darkness. That force of darkness within us overcomes the goodness within us. And the result is we become powerful, and our power is based on the need for control. We want control over our relationships. We want control in our work. We want control over our money, because we can't let that control go. Because without us, we believe the world will not run. And so what starts to happen, he's being controlled by, Mahishasura is being controlled by his these demons. And they represent, Ramakrishna talks about Satripu, lust, jealousy, greed, envy. These demons control Mahishasura. And we need to be right. We want to be seen. We want to be recognized. We need to be accepted. All these are part of Mahishasura. And when that control starts to create irritation within yourself, when your blood pressure starts to increase, when you start to, when your doctor tells you you've got to let go of things, otherwise you're going to die, when your need for control and power start to cause decimation in your relationships, when your kids or your spouse starts to become fearful of you, or even the employees, there's a problem. And at that point, the gods who are feeling helpless, because now Mahishasura has, the demon has taken control of the whole universe, what do? Now they surrender to the Divine Mother. So in this practice, what you find is that when that feeling of control, agitation, the need for power start to cause imbalances in your life, the sadhana for that practice is letting go. So the gods surrender themselves to the Divine Mother, and the Divine Mother awakens within them. And what happens then is that that need for control doesn't let go so quickly, because Mahishasura has this ability to change forms. So just when you think you have him in one form, he changes into another form. And we see that in the Chandi, as he takes all these shapes and forms. So the idea here is that, you see, when the Divine Mother awakens within us, the truth of who we are, we know what we should be doing, but because of the need for power and control, we can't let ourselves go. We can't let it go. So the Divine Mother comes and faces us, and then the demon has all these forms, and these forms are symbolic of what we are. First, the form of buffalo. The buffalo is one who's, I'm just going to quickly go through this, is one who is covered in mud, denies the truth of what we should really be doing. The mother is the truth, confronts us. You know what you're doing is wrong, and now you have to own up to it. But we don't want to let go of that. So instead, we deny, and the buffalo charges the Divine Mother. In anger, we charge that which is trying to confront us. So the Divine Mother takes a noose to calm the buffalo down. The significance is that through love, we start to control that angry side of us. Then the Mahishasura comes into a different form. So if you tell me this, another aspect of my ego shifts, another face of my ego comes out, and that's the shape of a lion. And the lion represents dharma. In this case, it represents false dharma. So it starts to justify itself. Well, I really need control and power to help others. So what happens is basically the straightforwardness, the hypocrisy, the Divine Mother with her sword cuts through that. And truthfulness now becomes revealed in us. And then it goes on, because the time is short, basically then it takes on these different shapes. The man represents the rational, logical part within us, and the Divine Mother cuts through that with her arrows. Arrows represent higher thoughts. So as higher thoughts penetrate our Mahishasura side, our intuition opens up. And then the elephant here is pride, and the Divine Mind cuts through that, and humility opens up within us. And then we find that, you know, then we start to regress back to childish behaviors, and then the Divine Mother cuts through that, maturation opens up, until the demon, in the last part of the story, the demon is faced where the Divine Mother has her foot on the neck of the demon. And then Mahishasura is looking up at the Divine Mother. And in that sense, he can no longer change shapes. He can no longer, you get to the root of who he is. When you get to the source of the original wounding, the original problem, and that's why you've been covering all this up. It's like an oyster. You've covered up all the original, the problem was covered up by all, you've been masking it. All the masks have been uncovered. You get to the source, the heart of the problem. Now the demon, in its complete surrender, looks up at the Divine Mother and recognizes, oh my God, you am I, and I am you. And the Divine Mother, looking down at the demon with eyes of love, kills the demon, and ignorance is removed, and knowledge is there. So that is the Rajasic ego being demolished within us. And the sadhana is surrender. When this happens, then the gods sing these praises to the Divine Mother. These praises represent the gifts that we get when the Divine Mother annihilates our Rajasic ego. So the gift of intuition, the gift of there's all these in the hymn, there's all these things. You get intuition, you get fearfulness, you become more introspective. So all these gifts that a sattvic person has, those are the gifts that you obtain. Now, with our last remaining time, what happens? There's still another obstacle that remains between you and the Divine Mother. And that is the obstacle of sattva. And sattva is something that is used, that we use in the course to help us become more spiritual. But then sattva itself also has to be let go. In the analogy, Ramakrishna uses the three robbers, where just ultimately that which brought you here also has to be let go. And what do we mean by this is that when you become sattvic, you become, what happens is you start to develop, you become closer to the source. Your ego has now, the tamas has been gone, the rajas has been demolished, and now your ego becomes like a mirror, and it can reflect the light of the Atman, the light of the divine. And with that light, you can read things and you can get things very quickly. You can meditate because your mind is more introspective. It's not looking for validation in the external world. It's now seeking it in the internal world. So you can get visions, you can get knowledge, but with all of that comes spiritual pride. And so you start to take pride in the knowledge. You start to think that you're holier than now. You start to get a sense of bliss that you want to remain within. And you become comfortable and complacent. And you think, I've done everything, I know everything. And that's when the obstacle of sattva appears. And it becomes what's called spiritual materialism, where spiritual things become a way of enhancing your own ego. And here is the deceiver selves into thinking we've developed spirituality, when instead of strengthening our egocentricity, where we are strengthening our ego through spiritual techniques. So we start thinking, the people that we associate with, well, I'm with the Dalai Lama, I'm with Deepak Chopra, you know, the books I read, it starts to make us feel like we are somebody. And that is an obstacle. So in the last chapter, it's really interesting. Tamas in the Chandi consists of one chapter. The Rajas in the Chandi consists of three chapters. Sattva, the demons of Sattva consist of seven chapters. So as you become more subtle, as you progress more, you start to see, my God, as you become more subtle, you start to see that there's more demons that are in the way. You become more aware of the obstructions. And in essence, there are seven obstructions that we have to go through in the last part, till we get to merge with the Divine Mother. And these obstructions are in the form of these different demons. Sugriva, which is our scholarship and pride. There is, once we get rid of that, then we face Dumralochana. Dumralochana is basically our spiritual ego. And the idea is that that it's what we can do, who we associate with. We create this spiritual ego that we have to demolish, the Divine Mother demolishes. And then we identify with our thoughts. I forgot to tell you, the idea really is identification. This is the last obstacle we have to face. If the first chapter, Tamas, was dealing with depression, okay, the second chapter was, the second story was dealing with power, the need for power, control, and manipulation. The third chapter is dealing with identification. It's all the identities that we that now our ego holds onto. And the identification with our thoughts, ultimately we have to dissolve that. Then we get to the heart of the ego itself. And these are the two main demons in this last section called Shumba and Nishumba. And they are brothers. Shumba literally means I. Shumba means that which shines. It is the ego which shines in the light of the Atman, and it creates a sense of I. And that I has a brother. The brother's name is Nishumba, and Nishumba means clinging, myness. I-ness, myness. And it is what the power that it identifies. So that clinging is what it clings to. So it clings to our thoughts. It clings to our identity, our ego, our scholarship, all the things that it clings to. That is what we have to let go. And in this story, you're disidentifying. So the sadhana in the third story is disidentification or witness consciousness. Because at this point, you now really can be the true witness. So you start to then, the third story, so then we get to disidentifying with your thoughts, disidentifying even with your identity. What do we mean by this? Well, at the end, the Divine Mother is battling Shumba and Nishumba. There's actual physical battles that are occurring. And she punches Nishumba. And before Nishumba is going to die, what does he do? He sprouts 10,000 arms. And he says, do you know who I am? Before we die, we start to cling to everything we've done, all the identities in this lifetime and previous lifetimes. And you'll see that. If you ever go to an old age home, I had a friend who was telling me, she's a PT. She's telling me that it's interesting. As you get older, the body gets weaker. The mind gets weaker, but the ego grows stronger. And if you're like a physical therapist or occupant, when you try to help people, these people, they come in and they tell you that, do you know who I am? I was a CEO at a company. Of course I can walk. I can do this. We keep holding on to the things that we had done previously because our ego won't let that go. And it becomes stronger and stronger. And so it's hard for us to let go of that. So there's this constant struggle, this battle, that even simple things as walking, getting out of the bed, become a struggle, but we don't want to admit to that because we were presidents of a company. I was great. And that's the identity I hold on to. Ultimately, that identity has to be let go of. And so Nishumba ultimately dies, and then the Divine Mother now faces the ego itself. And in this experience, Rama Maharishi, a great saint, talks about in the deepest meditation, when you've let go of everything, then the pulsation just I remains. I, without any sense of identification. But it is still the ego, the limited ego. That has to be eliminated. So what happens in the battle now between Shumba and the Divine Mother? As soon as the Divine Mother hits, as soon as Shumba hits the Divine Mother, the Divine Mother hits him right back. And it's immediate karma. Whatever you do, you find you're doing it to yourself. And I forgot to tell, in this last statement, Shumba says to the Divine Mother, Mother, you've defeated all my warriors, but you haven't fought a fair fight. You fought depending on the help of all your Shaktis, of your entourage, because the Divine Mother in this fight had all these Shaktis that were fighting also against the against all these demons that were in the way. So the Divine Mother says, look here, behold, and watch. All the demons that, I mean, all the devis that were fighting on her behalf become reabsorbed into her. The world dissolves back into her. And all that's left is just the feeling of I and the divine. That's all that's left. And now what does Shumba do? He grabs hold of the Divine Mother because he can no longer has any more strength, and he jumps into the air and he goes higher and higher and higher until what duality is meeting non-duality, till you get into the primal sense of ignorance, jnana, and getting further, the duality dissolving. The Divine Mother at the highest level before we meet into the Bhavamukha, before duality disappears into the non-dual state, the Divine Mother takes the ego, Shumba, and throws him down to earth. And you hear a thud. And Shumba is destroyed, killed. And order is restored. This is the experience of the ego disintegrating, where Vivekananda talks about all of a sudden, the world starts to disappear when he was touched by Sri Ramakrishna. The walls disappear. Everything around you is being sucked up as he's almost into a void. And at that point, if you're not ready for it, as Swami Vivekananda wasn't as a young boy, Naren, he said, wait a minute, I have my father and my mother. Whatever attachments you have, that will bring you back. So the idea is to prepare ourselves and letting go, letting go, letting go, so that the transition can be easier, so we can dissolve into our infinite true nature and experience who we really are. So that is the experience of the Chandi, and that's the experience of my mother.
That's like a drama, you know? It's amazing how it all works. And I was thinking when you were saying each step, so what are the action steps we can take for each third of this story? So the first one with Thomas might be go to mother, right? The first step, just pray to mother, turn to mother, whatever it is, to help get us out of that Thomas, that depression, that laziness or whatever it is, go to mother. And then the second for Rajasic is to surrender to mother, to know that we're not the one doing anyway. We think we're the workaholic. We think we're the action maker, making it all happen. But the truth is we have no control anyway. It's all working through us, right?
Exactly. She's running the show. Exactly.
She's running the show. And then the third, and I don't know if this is putting it the right way, maybe you can help me more, is more to let go of our little identity.
Yeah, letting go, detaching, and just being the witness and seeing that it's all mother's play. You know, in the beginning, when Sri Ramakrishna was asked he was asked, this is in the Gospel of Ramakrishna, where there's a disciple, Nanda, says to Ramakrishna, why has she assumed all the different forms? Why are some wise and some ignorant? And then Sri Ramakrishna says, it's because of her sweet will. And then Nanda said, it may be your sweet will, but it's suffering for us. It's suffering for us. And then what does Ramakrishna say? Ramakrishna says, but who are you? Who are you? Ultimately, it's discovered that when you surrender, you are that divine mother. You are that divinity itself. All of this was happening within you. It was a play within you. It is just surrender to it and witness it. And that, exactly, that's the idea. That's the three being sadhanas of this chandi.
And so many times, I think when things are going well with us, we don't think of God. We're just happy and going our lucky way and skipping along and blah, blah, blah. But in times of suffering, we turn to God, you know.
Right.
I remember my dad passed last year, but, you know, and he had dementia, but he, you know, when he was in his faculties and everything, I would ask him, Dad, do you believe in God? And he thought about it and he goes, only in emergencies.
Yeah.
And I think that's the attitude of so many people. It's like, well, when it's convenient, when I need God, sure, I'll call on God. But otherwise, why do I need God, you know?
Right. But that's the beauty of Mother. See, and when you look at it, Holy Mother's point of view, so from her point of view, she's go play, have fun. She would tell even like, she made statements like, oh, if Ramakrishna would be like telling about, oh, my boys, they shouldn't eat so much at night. And Mother's like, no, let them eat, let them enjoy. I'll take care of them. So Mother wants us to go out, enjoy, experience, because the turning has to come from within. There has to be a shifting from a genuine shifting. It's hard for some of us to think, why can't my kids be spiritual? Why can't, you know, the people I love be spiritual? Everybody has their own time. Everybody has come into their world, this world, with their own purpose. And that has to be experienced before the turning comes through. I'll add another point. You know, that sometimes when we look at the, when I look at the tamas, and I was looking at it from the point of view, you know, from Madhukaitabha's point, from the demon's point of view, from our, what is the need that's lacking? There's a need that's not being fulfilled. And so when you're tamasic, you'll find the need that's not being met is you find connection. You're not being understood. You're not connecting. There's the need for the need for being valued. We want to be seen. And what we're doing is we're sort of like we're doing these tamasic acts as sort of like a rebellion, because we're not being heard or seen or valued. So when we're seen by the Divine Mother, ultimately, then we feel valued. We feel recognized, because that's part of our intrinsic nature. In, you know, the divine itself, when it is self-recognition, it recognizes it's glorious, it's beautiful, it's all-pervading, you know, it is inconceivable. There are certain needs, even Mahishasura, when I think about why he's acting out from a sense of control, power, he's only wants security. I told this that when I was doing this, there's this singer, Freddie Mercury, who reminded me of Mahishasura from the point of view, he got himself entrapped in all these difficulties, but he wanted to be set free. So we get entrapped in these things and we feel the difficulty of the power, need, control, but we urge to be free. It's our need for security. And where can we find security? Ultimately in Mother herself. So, and last one, is even sattva, what's the basic need that's not being met? It's our need for identity. I have to define myself. You know, especially as I understand, when you get older, how sometimes the need to be, you know, that as a CEO, as you feel useless as you get older, the kids no longer need you. You find that the, you know, the company that you're running doesn't need you. And then you start to feel more alone. And who am I? That question comes up. Who am I? So the Divine Mother can fill that need also by defining who you are. So I think she's the fulfiller of all needs. And that is the beauty. And here's another clue that I discovered. If you try to place, from our Vedanta perspective, Ramakrishna tradition, put Holy Mother as the Divine Mother, as you're saying, then I'll say, do you find, but the Holy Mother, we don't see her as Durga. She, although she does manifest, people have seen her as Saraswati. She's the giver of knowledge. They have seen her as Lakshmi. They've seen her as the Universal Mother, where universes are, where there's this one, I was reading one thing, there's this one vision a person had, is Jagadamba, Mother, Holy Mother had a, she was Jagadamba, where children are being born out of her, jivas are being born out of her, and then she's eating them. She's dissolving them back into her. So she is Kali, she's all of these. But when you feel in the presence of Mother, all you feel is love, to me. All she doesn't, you don't see her fighting, you don't see her killing, you don't see her in the chanti, that way you see. So another way that I see, when you feel, I asked Swami Chaitananda yesterday, and I was asking another Bhajanan from Kali Mandir, we don't see this experience from Holy Mother's side. So how does she destroy our Mahishasura, our Shuma Nishumba, our Madhukaitaba? How does she do that? And I love that sense. From her point of view, all you have to do, call on her, all she wants, call on her and be in her presence. Chaitananda Maharaj said, if you touch the feet of Mother, people would touch her, she becomes like a sponge. She soaks up all your Mahishasura, your negative karma. She absorbs that. She is nothing but love. She gives nothing but love. She's the human Mother embodied in unconditional love. So being in her presence, she's giving you love, love, love. Love will fulfill your need and dissolve Madhukaitaba. Love will give you the value of being worthy and dissolve Mahishasura. Love will give you and dissolve the need for identity, your Shuman. Love is all you need. All you need is love. So anyways.
And love is all there is.
That's all there is.
Oh my gosh. That's so beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And I know we can feel Mother's love. When we turn to her, when we surrender her, we feel Mother's love, and that brings us so much joy, and that's what we really want in life anyway, right?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Srinidhi.
Thank you so much, Swami. You are amazing. I learned so much from you every single time.
Thank you.
Many blessings, everybody. We'll see you next month.
Bye.
Thank you. Jai Ma.
Jai Ma. Jai Ma. Jai Ma. Jai Ma.